From KMUW Studios and part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Books and Whatnot. I'm Suzanne Perez, KMUW's resident book reviewer.
And I'm Beth Golay, host of KMUW's Marginalia Podcast. This podcast was recorded on November 26th, 2024. Any references to new or forthcoming and the like are relative.
Hello, Beth.
Hello, Suzanne.
Ching, ching.
Chin, chin.
It is December, and well, when this podcast drops, it will be December 1st, and it is such a great time of year to talk about reading. Everyone's buying books for the holidays. We're talking about what we've read this past year, looking forward to next year. Before we forget, we want to say that upcoming in this episode, we will be talking to Emma and Sam Koss of the Norwich Bookstore in Norwich, Vermont.
Yes. And I am so happy to talk to these two. I met them before they were Emma and Sam Koss.
They are so cute and such great booksellers.
Oh, my gosh.
I could have talked to them forever.
I know.
You know, every episode now, we've been bringing you an independent bookseller from somewhere in the country, and they are in Norwich, Vermont. And, yeah, you look forward to hearing some of the upcoming titles that they are excited about. Another thing that's happening this time of year is it is like favorite books of the year time. Just today, as we're recording this, the New York Times has released its 100 notable books of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Always interesting and always kind of a neat exercise to go down that list and see how many you've read. I have read 13, I'm embarrassed to say, because 13 out of 100 is not much.
I went through and marked the list. I don't think it gave me a number at the bottom where I was expecting, but I think it was fewer than 13.
I am currently reading Danzy Senna's Colored Television.
Uh-huh.
Right, which is on that list. So once I finish that, it'll be 14. But that's the New York Times 100 notable books. Oh,
it did give me a total.
All right. What's your total, Beth?
10.
10. A nice round 10.
But I'm proud of all 10.
I know. Yeah, there were some goodies. There were some goodies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was all fours, which is haunting my very existence. But you know what else came out this week, Beth?
What?
The NPR.
Oh, yeah, I do know.
It's NPR Books We Love.
Yes.
Formerly known as
Book Concierge.
This is a database, a searchable database going back now 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
This year's database alone has more than 350 titles. You can search. We tell you every year, people, if you haven't checked it out, you really, really need to. Go to kmuw.org. There will be a link to it there. And you just go to the 2024 database, and on the left side are all these categories. They have staff picks. They have book club ideas. They have relatively short, rather long, funny stuff. On the dark side, you can search by genre, topic, length. It is so handy.
And you know what else it includes?
What?
Links to our coverage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well. I wasn't going to say it.
We are so thrilled every year to be included in that.
Don't go to it unless you have at least half an hour to click around in there, because it's a time suck because it's so wonderful. But so that's the books we love, NPR Books We Love. And then Amazon came out with its, you know, Amazon Book of the Year. And unlike almost every other organization, which has named Percival Everett's James as Book of the Year, again, such deserved praise there for that novel. The Amazon editors named a nonfiction book called The Boys of Riverside, A Deaf Football Team and A Quest for Glory by Thomas Fuller. That was their book of the year. So an interesting pick.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And I'm very intrigued by that and want to check it out. A sports kind of true story, inspirational Friday Night Lights-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, very good.
Coming up in this episode, Beth and I are going to share our own personal top dozen books. We took six apiece.
You know, I never used to do this until you started making me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, good.
So I did start thinking about it as I was reading the books, except I think I was telling you earlier, I didn't keep track of some of the books that I read that I did not interview the author. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that some of those might have been my favorites of the year as well.
So we need to talk book tracking.
Yeah, we do.
You need to make a resolution. We're going to get you on track to track every single thing you read.
I'm going to put that resolution right next to my Summer of Saunders and Moby Dick. So there you go.
And our 1,000 books to read. Wow. We've had a lot of reading resolutions over the years, but that doesn't stop us. It's all about, you know, hopeful optimism. So yeah, we're moving forward. But yeah, so we're gonna talk about a couple of our of what we've been reading lately, just a few, and then we'll get right into our favorite books of the year.
We're keeping this part short because we are going mm-hmm. to talk about our favorites. So my first book is called The Burrow by Melanie Chang, and she lives in Australia, and this book is set in Australia, and it's set in one city that had like the most stringent lockdown procedures in place. And
during the pandemic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is set in the midst of COVID-19. And it's told through a chorus of voices, a chorus of characters. When we first start the book, the dad of the family is driving on the empty streets. I'm going to say Melbourne, but I'm pretty sure that's wrong. But driving on these empty streets, and he's going to pick up this rabbit, this hare. And I don't even remember the type of hare it is. And he's stopped by a police officer, and he's like, I'm getting a pet. I was told that I was allowed. Like, they really wouldn't let anybody out on the streets. They were that strict. And so they bring this pet rabbit home, and it starts to, you know, we see all of these family members as they are interacting with this rabbit, and we are learning about what they're dealing with, this horrible grief from this tragedy that happened to the family, and how each character in turn is dealing with it. So you have the dad, the mom, the daughter, and then the mother's mother, so the grandmother. And so, I mean, I don't want to give anything away. We were very careful about not even saying what this unspeakable tragedy was during the interview. But I just want to say, I mean, Haley and I finished this book, and we both liked it so much.
Wow.
It was really well done. It's worth reading. Okay. It's not too terribly long. I don't recall how many pages it is, but I mean, it was really easy to read. It was really beautiful, and I highly recommend it. It was called The Burrow by Melanie Chang.
That sounds fantastic. We talked previously about how we're getting all of those pandemic era novels now. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to me because it seems so far in the past now in a way. But yeah, when we read about those experiences, it puts you right back there. So yeah, I'm gonna add that to my list. All right. Well, my first one that I want to talk about is the new Stanley Tucci memoir.
Oh.
This one is called Stanley Tucci, What I Ate in 1 Year. So fans of Stanley Tucci and even just foodie types will remember that about 3 years ago he came out with a book called Taste, My Life Through Food. That was more about his childhood, his growing up in this Italian family, how he developed his taste for food. It also talked about his battle with tongue cancer and basically was kind of a look through his whole life. This memoir, which came out this fall, is literally a journal of his gastronomical journey through 2023. I again took this in on audio, which mm-hmm. I highly recommend because Stanley Tucci's voice is fantastic and you really get his kind of curmudgeonly tone. He is really witty, super dry. His sense of humor is fantastic. I happen to love his name dropping. I just think it's the coolest thing to say, oh, you know, John Krasinski and I went out to Guy Ritchie's estate in England, and it's just his writing, his memory. It is so great. And once again, it's sort of peppered with recipes here and there, both for food and for cocktails. And it's just a delight. Once again, it did not disappoint. It is What I Ate in 1 Year and Related Thoughts by Stanley Tucci. What's so cute about him, too, is here he is. I mean, he's in his older years, for sure, and he has these young kids with his new wife. So he met the queen, and then he has to go home and fix what his son wants for for dinner. So it's just so cool. But anyway, loved that. Love that book. Yeah, highly recommended once again.
Okay. So my next one is called Water, Water by Billy Collins. And Billy Collins is a 2-time U.S. Poet Laureate, and he's in his 80s. He still took time out to talk to me. He was in Hawaii, you know, to give a workshop, and he found a quiet spot out among all of the birds and the sounds of nature to talk to me. And I enjoyed so many of his poems, and just, it's, you know, if you've never read Billy Collins, he really is one to start with because he is so accessible.
That's what I wonder if there, you know, there are people who are so intimidated by poetry, period, mm-hmm. you know, that might be a good, you know, like Mary Oliver and Billy Collins, like start there, you know?
Yeah. And listen to the interview, because I even asked him, how should people who do not understand poetry or do not understand how to read it, how should they approach Billy Collins? And so we have this whole question and answer about that, mm-hmm. about, you know, just what exactly you're seeing on the page.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, yeah, Water, Water by Billy Collins.
All right. My next one is The Wedding People by Allison Espach. This one was recommended to me by one of our Literary Feast friends who was reading it the last time we met. And it ended up being a perfect vacation read. I went on vacation to visit some family recently and had some extra reading time. And this one just was fantastic. The cover is very lighthearted looking. It's got, you know, sort of someone in the water with like one arm is holding up a bottle of champagne and one arm is holding up like the peace sign. It screams rom-com
yeah.
to me. This book is so much more than that. So it also has a little darker side. But essentially, our main character named Phoebe is having some marital problems. She and her husband are splitting up. She's distraught. She doesn't really find a reason to go on living. And so she puts this hotel room at this wonderful resort in Newport, Rhode Island on her credit card for a few nights with the intention of going to end her life. And so that's a very dark,
yeah,
very, very dark way to start a novel. But then what happens is she shows up at the resort. It turns out that she's the only person there that isn't part of this particular wedding party. So the very privileged bride thinks she has reserved the whole place for her friends and family and attendees for this amazing million-dollar wedding ceremony. And Phoebe kind of gets sucked into it kind of accidentally. And I won't give anything else away because it is really interesting to see her character go from, you know, who she is when she arrives at that place and so distraught, and then being sucked into the festivities of this wedding, the relationships, the dysfunctionality of all these different people coming together. And I'll just leave it at that. But it is a fabulous read. It's laugh out loud funny in places. It's poignant. It's just, again, just a perfect kind of vacation read if you're looking for that. But it's also, I would call it a rom-com plus.
Okay.
That's The Wedding People by Allison Espach.
And, you know, I do notice that a lot of these books that I previously would turn my nose up at, these rom-com ones, mm-hmm. they really do usually have something more to them than just, you know, it's no longer your Harlequin romance.
No, not at all. And as a matter of fact, they're sometimes more enjoyable than those literary fiction award winners,
right.
to tell you the truth. So what's your next one?
Okay, so my next one is City of Nightbirds by Juhae Kim. And this is, it's a book about ballet. It's set in the complex world of the Russian ballet. And
complex, I bet.
Oh, my word. So Natalia Leonova is our main dancer's name. And she starts dancing when she's young. She becomes the prima ballerina. She can jump higher than anybody. And we just kind of follow her through life, you know, in St. Petersburg, and then moves to Moscow, and then moves to Paris. At the beginning of the novel, she's back in St. Petersburg, and then we kind of learn what happens through memory. And so it was fascinating. I really didn't know a lot about the Russian ballet. You know, some political stuff comes into this book because one of the male ballet dancers.
Danseur is the term.
Well, I learned something today that I didn't know, but this danseur makes a political statement about, you know, at this time Russia is invading Crimea. And you would think that they're talking about Ukraine, but no, this was a different invasion. And so I'm sure there's so much more I could learn about this. And this is probably just the tip of the iceberg, but it was a beautiful tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. It was really, it was a fun dive into this world of ballet. City of Nightbirds by Juhae Kim.
All right. And my last one for today is the Booker Prize winner for this year, Orbital by Samantha Harvey. no surprise, actually, when something wins that prestigious award, but it is fantastic. So Orbital follows a day in the life of six astronauts as they are on board the International Space Station. So it follows them as they are orbiting the Earth, kind of looking at it, reflecting on it. This book, I will tell you, has little to no plot. I mean, there are things that happen, but for the most part, it is beautiful writing kind of about the power of nature, of cooperation. You come away from this book realizing what a pinprick you are in the existence of the universe.
Well, I heard an interview that she gave. I believed it was somebody at BBC. And she was talking about how she had to make sure she stayed true to what was happening directly below the space station. She couldn't like write a storyline of something that was happening some other part of the world. She really tried to keep true to where the space station was at this time. And I found that part fascinating.
Right. She actually wrote this again during the pandemic.
Right.
When people couldn't travel, and she was sort of in her mind and in her research traveling to the space station and taking it, yes, very seriously, and making sure that her writing and the timeline, because timeline here is so important in this novel. And it even talks about what a challenge it is to wrap your mind around time when you're in space. So that's part of it. But yeah, she was very, you can tell the research there was meticulous.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this gets us to our favorite books of the year. How are we going to do this? Hold on. I'm going to pour some more wine
okay.
first.
I think... because we probably have talked about these books before, there's no need to do a deep dive.
Okay, so we each have a top six.
Yes.
All right. So what is your number six book?
The God of the Woods by Liz Moore.
Yes. I had that at number five.
Okay.
Do you remember just reading that? That's the book I skipped work for.
So not only are we drinking wine, we're admitting to skipping work.
I'll say it again. It was like an hour. It was an hour at the end of the day, but absolutely I ducked out early to finish that book.
We both liked the book a lot. I interviewed the author. That was a good interview if you want to go out and find my conversation with Liz Moore. And it was a literary feast book. And I believe it was a pretty good consensus that people liked that book as well, right?
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much. It was suspenseful. There were really well-developed characters. It was just so well done, seamless as it reached a very satisfying ending. It had just everything you want. It was kind of the book of the summer.
You know, it's serial killer, summer camp,
yeah.
But it's so not what you think it is.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Love that. That's a great, great pick.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
What about you?
My number six is There Are Rivers in the Sky by Elif Shafak. This is, I just spoke about it recently, but this is the, it's so silly for me to think that one of my favorite books of the year is about the Epic of Gilgamesh and a water drop. You know, I mean, that's essentially this. It follows this, you know, drop of water through the centuries. This was so well done. It was three distinct timelines. Again, fantastic characters. A point of history with the research into the Epic of Gilgamesh and the translation of that that I just had no idea about. I love that reading brings that to us. I love that, you know, we can open up a novel that just has a beautiful cover, which this in fact does, and just not know where it's going to take you. And that's kind of what I felt like when I was reading this novel.
That's the book I was supposed to read.
Yeah, and I haven't read the people of the book either.
There
so, you know, you know about our goals, our
next
reading
year.
Goals. Next.
We're going to park that next to Moby Dick as well.
Okay, what's your number five?
Number five is James by Percival Everett.
And that's my number four.
Yeah, yes. And everybody knows what James is.
Retelling
of Huckleberry Finn from James's perspective.
Jim, wow, has this book just become part of the 2024 zeitgeist. It is everywhere. And I have not, I don't know about you, I have not talked to a single person who has read it that hasn't liked it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't think I have either.
It is one of those books that crosses all boundaries as far as audience. You could give this book to anyone. And I have to say again, I don't know if we said it the first time we talked about James, But you do not have to read Huck Finn first. As long as you know the basic gist of Huck Finn, which is Huck Finn escapes his family and heads downriver with Jim, who is a slave. That's all you need to know. You don't have to go back and read Huck Finn or read Huck Finn for the first time before you experience this novel.
But if you have time and you want to.
Of course.
I just had to read Huckleberry Finn for one of my classes in undergrad. And so it was fresh for me. And I do think that that helped me enjoy James even more.
You did probably catch a lot more of the details.
Right.
And were probably able to, because I did find myself thinking, oh, yeah, these characters seem familiar, you know, the ones who show up and are kind of like con men. But you don't, I just don't want people to feel intimidated or feel like they can't start that novel until they read something else. Because you know what happens when that happens. You just don't read it. So that brings me to my number three novel of the year. This is crazy. Margot's Got Money Troubles, a book about OnlyFans.
I was going to say boxing, but that's not right, is it?
It's sort of about, it's about wrestling. It's about wrestling and OnlyFans. I mean, how bizarre. But you know, I loved Big Swiss last year. So give me a quirky character, a weird storyline, some, you know, people to root for. You got me. Margot's Got Money Troubles by Ruffie Thorpe. It's funny. You just really pull for her, you know, as a character. It's a young single mother trying to make it against all odds and doing so, you know, just it's her against the world. It's her making mistakes, making huge mistakes, and going on with life in spite of them. It is a delightful read. It was super surprising to me. And that is Margot's Got Money Troubles by Ruffie Thorpe, my number three novel of the year.
Okay, so my number four is Martyr by Kaveh Akbar. Kaveh Akbar is a celebrated poet, and I do love a novel that is written by a poet because it's like, you know how they're so particular with finding just the right word to go in the poem. And I really think that their fiction, their prose is the same way. I think you and I have the same experience of when we read novels by poets, we're just like clutching our hearts that we can't get to in our rib cages.
yes, all of that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't even know I don't know if I should just try to describe this. It's, you know, it follows an Iranian-American, Cyrus Shams. It's through his journey of sobriety and the quest for a meaningful existence. He finds an artist and travels to see this artist who is her, basically her living art display is she is actively dying because she found out she has cancer and is not seeking treatment. And I think that's about all I'm going to say because what else can I say other than this book is it's really well done.
Yeah, it's one of those books. Well, put it this way. It came out really early in the year, and we're still thinking about it.
There you go. It was a January. That's right. It came out on January 24th.
Yeah, and here we are in December still thinking about it and talking about it. That was on my honorable mentions list, by the way.
Martyr. And Martyr with an exclamation point.
Yes, Martyr.
And it has, like, you have to remember that the cover had, like, this cartoonish. Yeah, so don't. It's not so serious, especially because we're talking about Iranian-Americans.
Right.
It's not like that.
Good one.
Thank you.
My number two is Beautyland by Marie-Helene Bertino. This one, again, just super quirky. This girl is born in the 70s and pretty much believes through her whole life that she is an alien. And she was put here on Earth to report back to her home planet all of the crazy things that happen here. And that's it in a nutshell. But again, it's so beautifully written. Marie-Helene Bertino is the author of a novel called Parakeet that a good friend of ours cannot stop raving about, Kristen, at Exile in Bookville in Chicago.
Kristen.
One of these days, Kristen, I will read Parakeet. It might be coming up here in the next few months because when I read Beautyland, I wanted to go back and read everything she's written. It's quirky. It's, I know I say poignant a lot, but that it shows, you know, kind of what my reading style is. It's super surprising. You just, and again, it all builds to this ending where it leaves you with a few questions, let's just say. So that is Beautyland by Marie-Helene Bertino at my number two.
Okay. My number three is The Most by Jessica Anthony.
Oh, I loved that too.
In fact, last week, Lou was telling me she was bound and determined to get here at 7:30 the next day. And I said, well, what are you doing to actively make sure that happens? And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, tell me what your evening is about. Well, I read. I said, on your phone. And she's like, yeah. I said, nope. You have to read a physical book because you can't have that light right before you try to go to sleep. So I said, let me find a book for you. And I walked back to my desk and then I saw The Most by Jessica Anthony. And I had the audible gasp. I went, So that tells you how much I really enjoyed this book.
Yes. God, didn't it remind you of Mothering Sunday by Graham Swift?
It did a little bit.
Much.
It
On Chesil Beach, those kind of quiet day in the life novels. I loved it.
Day in the life, but also, it kind of reminded me of some of the stories we've read by Raymond Carver or Flannery O'Connor or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's about a husband and a wife. And it's set in November 1957, and I remember Sputnik 2 had just launched into space, and there's a dog up in space.
Which came in handy for trivia that week.
That's right. It did.
Yes.
But she decides it's a very warm November, and she decides to take a dip in the apartment complex pool where nobody swims, and she doesn't leave the pool.
It's so great.
I loved this book.
Yeah, it's so like you get to the end of it, and you're like, whoa.
And I did interview the author, and so, yeah, check that one out. But, yeah, it's
fantastic.
Called The Most by Jessica Anthony.
Okay, I'll do a couple of my honorable mentions just to get these out of the way before we do our number ones. Susan Gusho, who listens to our podcast, is going to be so upset if I don't mention this book, and it's Monstrillo by Gerardo Cordova. This is the WTF book of the year. And I absolutely frickin' loved it. It's about a piece of lung that turns into a boy. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Monstrillo by Gerardo Cordova. And then I also have to talk about Headshot by Rita Bullwinkle. Mm. That has been on a bunch of lists, too.
It was on the NPR
yes,
list.
Uh-huh. I have to say again, this book deserves so much more attention. It follows these girl boxers through one tournament. Each chapter is a different fight. And that's all I'm going to say. They're in this, this podunk town and Nevada somewhere, and you get their backstories and their hopes and dreams, and it's so beautifully done. And then North Woods by Daniel Mason.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I read that on New Year's Day of 2023, and I'm still thinking of it. It is beautiful. It is setting as character. It tells the tale of this house in the woods in New England through centuries and generations. It's absolutely fantastic. North Woods by Daniel Mason. So what is your number two?
It's one you just read.
Ah.
Because I loaned it to you.
That's
on your
right.
Vacation.
And I gave it back.
And it's beautiful. She returned it in pristine condition.
Thank you very much, even though I was on the beach.
The Safe Keep by Yael van der Wouden.
Van der Wouden. Oh, wow, this book, Beth.
It was really amazing. And she was shortlisted for the Booker Prize? That's
yes.
right? Okay.
Yes.
I just remember when I finished this book, I couldn't stop talking about it and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I loved my interview with her. I especially loved talking to her about, the meaning of her name. But it is set in post-World War II in a Dutch province.
The aftermath of World War II in a place where things happened that I didn't even realize had happened.
Right. I didn't either.
And you don't want to know too much going into this book because there are some surprises, some gasp-worthy surprises if you don't know that history. I spoke to another reader who had just read the novel or had read the novel this year and was much more familiar with that history, our friend Robin. And she, sort of caught on much more quickly what was happening. I did not. But my experience with this novel was so wonderful. And there's a sense of tension that is palpable as you read this. I mean, there's this sibling tension, and then there's the tension between Isabel and Ava. And all we can say is read it. And so many of these books, Beth, are very slim and yet so powerful. And I just, I love that. So that was your number two?
That was number two, The Safe Keep by Yael van der Wouden.
Okay, so this brings us to our number one novels of the year. And they are different.
Yes.
I'll talk about mine. It's All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker. I read this shortly after I read God of the Woods, actually. They almost seemed to me as a pair. It was in the summer months. And this is just a mystery that's so well told. It is the story of Patch and Saint and their friendship. And it's unbelievable as it unfolds. And yet, one thing I vividly remember about this novel is these super short, almost micro chapters. Very few of the chapters are more than two or three pages. And it just had this pace of like, what is going to happen next and then next and then next. And it just pulled me through. And this is one of those books, Beth, that I just closed and said, oh, this is it. I cannot sing its praises anymore. I highly, highly recommend it for, again, plot, character, setting. Everything is so beautifully, perfectly told. That's All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker, my number one novel of 2024.
There you go. My number one book of the year is The History of Sound by Ben Shattuck.
Oh, yes.
This was a collection of stories, linked stories. He talked about a hook and chain, which he made up. Mm-hmm. I also loved my conversation with this author. What I liked about this book is that both reading it and listening to it, you know I like to do that, mm-hmm. This was a full cast of characters for each of the stories. He's married to Jenny Slate. Nick Offerman, you know, narrated one of the stories. Each of the stories was connected by an artifact or a person or a place. And, you know, you get me to talk about if I like books or not, but I never really say out loud on Marginalia if I did. In fact, when I started my conversation with Ben Shattuck, I said, well, before we get started, I just need to say this book was perfect. And I really do think it was. I loved this book so much.
Absolutely magical. And I hope that anyone out there that sort of poo-poos short stories, or again, sometimes people just feel intimidated by short story collections or they don't know kind of where to begin or how, this would be a fantastic entry, don't you think?
I do. And, you know, I do think that if you are going to read the whole collection, start at the beginning.
Absolutely. You cannot pick, start at the beginning, read cover to cover.
You can pick and choose because typically story collections, you can. I mean, any of these stories can stand on their own.
Right.
But if you ever have the intention of reading more than one, start at the beginning. But first of all, the beginning, the title story, is beautiful.
Oh my
God, it's getting ready to be made into a film that he directed. He wrote the screenplay, I mean. And he said this is like an exploration of all of the different ways you could tell a story. Because remember that one that was a Radiolab script?
Yes.
But in the audio, it was an episode of Radiolab.
Yes.
It was so well done.
It's written as a Radiolab script. It sounds like Radiolab. Yes, again, highly recommend the audio. The performances are wonderful and just the experience of it on audio is great. Nick Offerman's voice, you know, was perfect for that character.
It was, yeah.
But there are scenes from so many of those stories that I still remember vividly.
Well, and that's, you know, I'm looking ahead to my honorable mention mm-hmm. list, and it's because I still remember pieces of these books. You know, we read books so quickly mm-hmm. for
yes.
our jobs. I do an interview a week, you do a review a week. And for something to stay with me, I'm looking at my list and I'm like, why were these my favorites? And it's because something has stuck with me. I can still tell you parts of the book that I loved or that hit me.
And that's when I'm looking at what my favorites mm-hmm. of the year were. It's definitely that. It's that stick-to-itiveness. It's the way they made you feel. There are scenes from Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls that I still think about during certain things that I do. Mm-hmm. I will say, deboning a chicken. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Every time I debone a chicken, I think of that memoir. And in the same way, there are things that we will see, swans, for instance,
oh.
or an apple tree, or, you know, I think about these things that we'll see and that is the beauty of reading, isn't it? I mean, it's so enriching to your life. And now I'm getting all, you know, philosophical, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. When we think about, you know, I've read 85 books this year, according to my logbook. And, you know, it takes a lot for a book to rise to the level of, oh my gosh, I will never forget. Even if it's just one scene, mm-hmm. it's fantastic, that mm-hmm. experience. So, yeah, let's talk honorable mentions if there are any on here that haven't been mentioned. I have two. They're very different.
Well, it's because ours overlapped. Our tops overlapped.
So two more I just have to say were highlights of my year. East of Eden by John Steinbeck. Yeah. Have to give a shout out to the king, John Steinbeck. Grapes of Wrath, East of Eden. Oh. And then, you know, I'm going to end on a high note with Leslie effing Jones. Leslie Jones, the comedian, put out a memoir this year. And all I can say is, if you're going to read this book, which I suggest if you don't mind cuss words, get the audio. Get the audio. It's like 15 hours of pure joy to be driving down the street or doing chores, vacuuming your carpet, and have Leslie Jones in your ear talking about her life. Oh, my goodness. This was a delight in every way. And I think that's funny to end to end my books of the year with Leslie. And the title of the book is Leslie Effing Jones by Leslie Jones.
I'm going to mention very quickly my list of honorable mentions.
Yeah, sure.
This was my first interview of the year at Wild and Distant Seas by Tara Carr Roberts, which was kind of a reimagining of Moby Dick, but through the one woman who had a speaking line from her perspective, and it kind of followed her family because each of the women in that family had a special magical gift. A Short Walk Through a Wide World by Doug Westerbeek.
I still have that on my short stack.
How We Named the Stars by Andres N. Ordrica, and he also is, you know, a poet who wrote a novel, and I don't know if it's just the lyrical language that has me remembering that book, but I remember it. This Other Eden by Paul Harding. He won the Pulitzer for Tinkers, and this was set on, you know, an island off the coast of Maine, and kind of based on a real story, but it's his own fictionalized version. And Water, Water by Billy Collins, because I did love that book so
much.
And
that was just this past month.
Yeah.
You know, I hesitate to even talk about our favorite books of the year because we have a whole nother month of reading.
We really do.
And as you know, one of my favorite books of 2023 was something I read at the very end of the year, which is Strange Sally Diamond. I fully expect we've got a lot of good reading ahead of us.
I haven't read Murakami.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's right. Murakami. This is the time of year, though, where I look back through those notable book lists and I say, okay, what of these do I really need to get to? It's just it's such a bookish problem.
I know. As I was going through the New York Times list today, I thought, oh, I was going to read that.
I know. There were too many books, Beth, and so little time.
And one of the, I'll call this backlist, but one of the backlist books that I read for school was Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin.
Yeah.
Loved that book.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
So we, I'll give you a little hint to our January 1st episode. We're going to focus on the Read ICT Challenge, which is going to start its ninth year in 2025. This is the 12-book, 12-month challenge here locally in Wichita, but we have participants from all over the globe now via Facebook and elsewhere. And Beth and I are going to, for our January episode, going to go over the 12 categories for 2025 and maybe talk about what we're looking forward to reading, what would fulfill those categories, and then we'll bring you definitely our December reads.
And we hope to have a special guest. TBD.
TBD.
And speaking of special guests, I am so happy to welcome Emma and Sam Koss of the Norwich Bookstore in Norwich, Vermont. Emma, Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
So tell us a little bit about your store.
Well, the Norwich Bookstore has been here in Norwich for 30 years as of this summer. We opened in 1994. Emma and I were not there at the time. We were very young and not living anywhere near Vermont yet. But that is when the store opened in this community. And if you've never heard of Norwich, what you need to know about us is that we're located in the beautiful Upper Valley. So we're kind of right in the middle of the state, all the way over on the eastern border with New Hampshire, right on the Connecticut River. And this town has produced a lot of Olympic athletes. And our sort of geographical claims to fame are that we are just 5 minutes from the Dartmouth College campus, and we're right around the corner from the King Arthur Baking Company campus. So it's a great place to have a bookstore. And it's a wonderful community. It's a community of readers, and we have a I think a disproportionate number of ratio of local authors, some really wonderful folks, some of whom are very highly acclaimed. So we have this great community. When Emma and I were looking for the next step in our lives and looking for either a bookstore that needed people or people who needed a bookstore, this spot stood out to us immediately as a place that fit the bill. So we're happy to be here. We've been here about 3 years.
So if that's the base of King Arthur Flour, you must have all the pastries and treats that you want there anytime you want.
So they do lots of classes, and very often folks will be visiting just to take their classes and they'll be flying home. So they'll come to the bookstore after their class and leave us with all of their extra baked goods.
That's called
a win-win. I can't take cinnamon rolls on the plane. It's a wonderful, wonderful relationship.
Well, I have to pipe in with my own Vermont story. My husband and I helped a friend move to Burlington, Vermont a couple of years ago. Beautiful place. I'd never been to Vermont. And as we were there, we visited some local breweries. I can't say enough good things about Vermont. But we kept everywhere we went, we were looking down at people's feet and they were wearing these boots. And I was like, what are those boots? They are so awesome. And finally, we were at this brewery in Burlington. I just finally asked someone, what are those awesome like leather boots that you're wearing? She was like, oh, these are Blundstones. They're like the state shoe of Vermont. So that was our souvenir from Vermont. We bought some Blundstones. I'm wearing them today. I looked down at my feet and I was like, of course we're talking to the Vermont people. I'm wearing my Blundstones. That was the best vacation souvenir I've ever bought because I wear them so often. So anyway, that's my Vermont story.
Are you guys wearing Blundstones?
That is an extremely Vermont story. No kidding.
The gal at the brewery was like, oh, you can do anything in these. You can, you know, go on hikes. You can milk cows. I was like, yeah, okay. I'm going to, I'll keep that in mind.
Well, those
the two
are
things you do every day.
Yeah, those are the two Vermont state activities.
Well, it was delightful. Vermont is so gorgeous. So we're talking today about, you know, just kind of titles that you are excited about. We've got obviously the holidays coming up. You might want to tell us some about your maybe local authors that people
might
be interested
in. You weren't name dropping before. Yeah. You just kind of slid it in there that you have several.
You know, I mingling with important people means maintaining some level of discretion, of course. I am certainly, in fact, happy to brag about our wonderful locals, many of whom are good friends and customers, in addition to being amazing writers. And one who has a new book this year is Flynn Berry. You may remember Flynn Berry from Northern Spy, which was it a read with Jenna Pick?
I think it was a Reese pick.
It was a Reese pick, yeah. And a bestseller, and is either in development for or is
they're making something
soon
out of it.
To come out as a series. This is kind of a book that was maybe sort of a fiction companion to Say Nothing by Patrick Radden Keefe. It's set in Northern Ireland in that sort of Thatcher era into at the height of the Troubles, and features two sisters who get caught up in a shadowy web with the IRA. It's a little bit of a thriller, but it's a book that could also just read as sort of straight ahead literary fiction. It appeals to a really wide range of folks. Beautifully written. She's had a couple previous books. That one really put her on the map. She did a follow-up to that book that came out this summer, and it's called Trust Her. Definitely for your readers of kind of literary suspense, anybody who loves Ireland or any sort of atmospheric setting.
If you liked a ton of French.
Yeah. I definitely would highly recommend checking out Flynn's work, and especially Northern Spy, which is the first book, and then Trust Her, which just came out this summer and will be new this holiday season.
Yeah, I interviewed Flynn Berry for Northern Spy for the Marginalia podcast. So yeah, she was delightful.
She's a delight. Yeah. We're big fans.
So what books are you excited about that are coming out this fall, this winter, I guess it would be?
Well, it's been actually a really wonderful year for books, I have to say, and I'm sure that you've heard from some other people singing the praises of some of the big books that came out this spring. Kaveh Akbar's Martyr was incredible. Of course, James by Percival Everett. I'm sure that name has been uttered and that title has been uttered on this program a few times this year already, but it really, the book deserves the hype, and nobody deserves that hype, I think, more than Percival Everett, who's been writing books like this for like 30 years. He's got an extensive back catalog of incredible work. I have to, of course, give a plug for Hanif Abdurraqib and There's Always This Year. My dude, I will follow him anywhere. And I think this might be his best book yet. So that's one book that came out this spring that I will be selling this holiday season. But, you know, it's rare. Little inside baseball. Maybe y'all have talked about this before, but not a whole lot of big books come out in December. By that time, we're so far into the busyness of the season that it can be hard to get traction. So a lot of the books that, you know, we're going to be hand selling this holiday season came out earlier. But I have a December book, actually. I have a book that comes out on December 3rd of 2024 that I am so excited about. Warning, it's a sequel. And you're going to want to read, there's enough going on that you're going to want to read the first book first. However, the first book is out in paperback. They're, in fact, both going to be in paperback. They're paperback originals. And it is such a joyful experience to read the first that you should do it. You'll thank me later. So the book I'm excited about is The Rivals by Jane Peck. It's coming out on December 3rd. It is a follow-up to Jane Peck's wonderful, wonderful kind of tongue-in-cheek mystery, The Verifiers, which came out a couple of years ago. This series follows a young woman. She's in her mid-20s, Claudia Lynn. She's a big fan of mysteries, and she gets a job working for a startup that verifies the identities of people on dating apps, which seems like a great place for a young detective fiction fan to be. Turns out there's a little more to the story. This company, while it does actually do what it purports to do, is also investigating the activities of those dating apps and the invasions of privacy and the creation of AI bots for some nefarious end that isn't quite clear yet. And of course, inconvenient, mysterious deaths start happening. The stakes start to rise. But despite that, these are really, really funny books. Claudia Lynn is a joy to hang out with. These books are kind of a love letter to being in your 20s in this particular place and time, but I think they're very universal. They're sort of a love letter to New York City, but not like the Chelsea Market part of New York City. Like, she lives in Gowanus, you know, she bikes everywhere. It's a book about having a kind of a dysfunctional family who you still love. There is the slowest burn romance of all time going on. These are just wonderful books. And in the second, The Rivals, if The Verifiers was a love letter to kind of noir and mystery tropes, The Rivals nods into John le Carré classic espionage territory with the same kind of love for the genre and tongue-in-cheek aspect. So I love these books. I am so excited to have a sequel. I did not want this sequel to end. It does set up for another one, which I am thankful for. But as we know, books get canceled all the time, even though they're great and people are reading them. And so I'm terrified that I might somehow not get a follow-up. So I am personally, I'm taking it upon myself to sell enough copies of both The Verifiers and The Rivals to the entire country, maybe the entire world, that they can't cancel this book. I'm like George Harrison producing Life of Brian, just so I can see the movie, you know? I will do that. I will do that for Jane Peck, just to see Claudia Lynn ride again. So read The Verifiers, and then December 3rd, pick up The Rivals.
That sounds like a good sort of twofer holiday gift, too. I love those genre mashup kind of books, but your strategy is very wise, because we don't want like a George R. R. Martin type situation here. We want her to, yeah, continue to keep writing, right?
Very personally motivated. I just want to read the next one.
Very good. Those sound very fun. Very fun. What else have you got for us?
So one of the books that I will be recommending this holiday season is actually one that came out way back in February, and I feel like it didn't get enough love. And that is a book called Greta and Walden by Rebecca K. Riley. This book is so lovely. I think right now we need books that are happy. And this book is about just two siblings who live in New Zealand. They're part Russian, they're part Maori, and they are just flailing in love. And it's one of those books where nothing bad really happens. It's very hard. In our line of work, you often get people who are looking for a happy book. Most books, something bad must happen, because what else keeps a book interesting? But in this book, really, it is just about learning this family and these two siblings who are both queer and who are both having trouble in their love lives, and their family is kind of a mess, but they're all just so warm and delightful and funny. And I wish the book had been three times as long because when I finished it, I just wanted to keep hanging out with their family.
I haven't read that book, but I recall loving the cover. It's got limes on it, right?
Yeah, it's bright pink and it's got a bag of limes on it.
Yeah, very stunning. Okay, do you have anything else?
Well, you know, I think a couple of other great gifts that we're definitely looking at this year. The aforementioned King Arthur Baking Company has their first ever cookbook devoted to just bread. This year, it is the aptly named King Arthur Big Book of Bread. It's a really excellent cookbook. It's beautiful and it's incredibly well researched. The three bakers and co-authors spent a lot of hours in the test kitchen to create this book, and we have signed copies. We did a national pre-order campaign for this. So if you've got a baker in your life, those are out there, and I definitely recommend checking that out. I'll also put in a plug for that Charles King book that just recently came out, Every Valley, about the creation of Handel's Messiah. I thought that was a really fascinating story and a fascinating read. It's the kind of weird history that appeals to a specific kind of reader, the kind of person who's sort of read everything and wants a story that they've never approached or have never approached from this angle before. And that, I think, for this season really is it. This story of the creation of this iconic piece of music that has signified hope for hundreds of years now, and that was created during a time that was not dissimilar from the one we're living in now. So I thought that was a really fascinating book and definitely worth a look for the person who needs just a new angle, a new angle on a piece of history that they've maybe not thought of before.
That would be a fabulous Christmas gift for so many readers. And I have to ask, are the signed copies of the Big Book of Bread signed by King Arthur?
The king himself.
That's awesome.
Alas, they have three signatures on them. None of them are the mythical resident of Avalon, but they are three world-class bakers. And let me tell you, getting all of them in the same room, these folks are like rock stars. They travel all over the country doing all these things. Getting these three folks in the same room to sign at the same time actually didn't happen. It was
It's a big
we had to
fuss.
coordinate it because they are all over the place. I'm promoting this book right now to be sure, but also just teaching classes and learning new techniques. It's fascinating. It's a really cool world. So we were excited to spend some time with all of them.
Do you have another one for us, Emma?
So, if you're looking for gifts for kids, you might have already heard of this book, but I think that it deserves all of the love and attention it's been getting. It's Impossible Creatures by Katherine Rundell, and I loved this book. I know you've probably heard books compared to Harry Potter before that's getting tired. This really is for your reader who loved Harry Potter. It is a wonderful story about a boy who learns that he is actually the keeper of the boundary between our world and another world where those mythic creatures like dragons and unicorns and griffins actually exist. And on the day that he discovers this, he also meets a young girl who is in trouble. She is being pursued in her world by a murderer, and he is the only person who can help her. It is once again just a lovely story of hope and friendship and coming together to fight for good and evil. It's a really great book.
What if you've never read Harry Potter?
You know, I talked to an adult who read this book.
I was going back to drunk booksellers. Remember how all
Okay.
none of the booksellers would have
Mistake. I have not finished the series.
What?
I've moved on. If you haven't read Harry Potter, that's fine. But I was talking to a customer who's an adult who's like, you know, I don't really read kids' books. I don't really like books about dragons, but I read this and maybe I do. So I would honestly recommend this to any reader, whether they are in middle grade or an adult.
Talk about things that make you feel better about the world. A middle grade book, any day. I love it. I
Yes,
love that
please.
recommendation.
And also, just for the record, when I knew Emma years ago, she did influence me to at least start the Harry Potter series. I stopped in book three, But I read 1 and 2 for you, Emma. I did that.
That's nice.
I mean, those are honestly books 1 through 3 are the best ones.
Okay. I think 6, but that's okay. You know, we don't need to debate that now.
It gets a little dark there in the middle.
I love it. I love it.
Well, Emma and Sam Koss from the Norwich Bookstore, thank you so much for joining us today. That seems like a good place to stop.
Until next time.
Keep turning those pages.
Bye, Beth.
Bye, Suzanne.
Books and Whatnot is a production of KMUW Wichita. Our team of engineers, producers, editors, and hosts are Mark Statzer, Torin Anderson, Haley Krausen, Jonathan Huber, Luann Stevens, Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Suzanne Perez. You can reach us by email sent to podcasts@kmuw.org, on Twitter @BooksAndWhatnot, and on Instagram, books_and_whatnot. Find more conversations and a list of books discussed in this episode at kmuw.org.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.